Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 377 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
Good. A little winded, but good.
A little winded?
Yes.
Must be all that electricity in the air.
It is. It is.
Well, the holidays are almost upon us, Todd. Everyone's celebrating, doing whatever they do around these times, driving around for the nearest Arthur Treacher's, maybe?
Oh, no, no, no. Long John Silver's son.
Oh, okay. So are you ready? Do you have the order ready to go?
No, because I don't get the order completely fixed until the day of. The numbers change. People come, people go. You gotta keep the fish math a fluctuating.
Right. Oh boy.
What?
So, with Christmas being on a Sunday, is this going to be a problem?
For who?
For you. Is it maybe going to be, like, closed or something?
Christmas Eve? No, it'll be fine.
Right.
They won't shut down on their busiest day of the year.
I don't know.
No, it'll be open.
I hope so, for your sake.
And I will take pictures of the whole experience and post it to my Twitter.
You should. I was actually going to suggest to you, Todd, are you aware of Instagram?
I've heard of it. One of our local bass players was trying to get our show on it the other
day. Oh, I remember that, and I remember promptly ignoring him. But I will say, I think you doing one of those Instagram stories,
mm-hmm.
where like you're like, hey guys, it's Todd, I'm headed to Long John Silver's to pick up the fish, you know, and putting that up as your first and only Instagram story.
Oh, okay.
Right.
I'm going to sign up. Go ahead.
Right. Go get an Instagram account now while I'm doing all the plugs of what we're going to be talking about on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be talking about one of our favorite books, one that we've talked about probably every issue that's come out on this show, being optioned being into a movie. Them Valiant Boys are at it again. And the story that we would not speak its name for the last 2 to 3 weeks, we are now allowed to speak its name.
Oh, boy.
Right. Our high-powered attorneys informed us we weren't allowed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. It was allegedly before.
Right. No more allegedly here. Digital sales and freebies, what we read from this past week, which is going to include Action Comics 993, Mr. Miraclay number 5, and the return of our preview review book. And if you've been following the show for the better part of the last year or so, and you know what today is, you probably know what that preview review book is. But we always like to tease it at the beginning, sweep those quarter hours and make you keep listening. Don't change that dial.
No, not your podcast dial.
Right. What we're looking forward to coming out this week. Todd and Joe have issues where we're going to discuss the Lobo Paramilitary Christmas special. And we're going to do discussion of the Punisher Netflix show. I did get a chance to watch an episode because I also got a chance to go see Star Wars The Last Jedi. And wow. I can promise you ahead of time, without going over anything with Todd, who didn't even know we'd be talking about it on the show.
We are?
That it will not be as long as the discussion of The Last Jedi on Podgracy.
Oh. Did you know they made a second Star Wars trilogy? And a third?
Listen, I'm just finding out about these Star Wars films today. I just watched The Wizard of Oz for the first time the other day.
Wow. What a world. What a world.
So, the folks behind the John Wick movies, a gentleman by the name of Chad Stahelski.
Nailed it.
Who is one of the co-directors of the John Wick films, is getting ready to bring Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, Kill or Be Killed, to the big screen.
Yes. It's about time.
There was a time where it felt as though there was a period of Image Comics where it felt a lot of the books seemed and felt like failed movie pitches.
Mm-hmm.
Or... here's a thing that I'd like to be made into a movie. I'll make it into a comic book since comic books are kind of hot.
Right.
I'd like to think that this wasn't that. But I'm happy that it's being made into a movie.
There's been a lot of talk about, like, Brubaker's stuff. I remember Sleeper. Wasn't Sleeper going to be a movie or something?
Sleeper was, and I think...
Incognito.
Incognito, yes, that was it.
And nothing really ever came of them. We always talked, like, what should, you know, it should be this and that. I always felt Criminal should probably have been. I think Criminal would really be, like, the way to go. But obviously anything Brubaker is going to do is going to be really good. But I'm just glad. I hope this actually, you know, puts him on the map and makes bigger and better things outside of comics. And I'd like to see more stuff and, you know, who knows what could happen from here on out. And our Killer Be Killed comics are going to be worth so much money.
Right. We'll be millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the only reason that we read comic books and do this podcast, is to become millionaires.
Right, and we're well on our way.
I'm just going to send out a tweet with every sponsor I can and hope for the best.
Oh, I hear that works every time.
See how that works. But no, I really think that this is something that would be great on the as a movie, and I think if people, whether people knew or didn't know it was a comic book, I think just the premise of it would intrigue so many people.
Right. It'll be that movie that unless you're a comic book fan, you would never even know. Mm-hmm. Unless they put it in the trailer, based on a graphic novel.
Ugh. Come on, say based on a comic book. Have some pride.
What? It's National Graphic Novel Day.
No. Listen, I got no problem the way that you read comic books, but don't act like comic books ain't comic books. They're comic books.
They are a higher art form known as a graphic novel. I remember when we used to hang out, there was a, but not us, but me and the friends from the comic shop, we'd go out and there was a couple of guys who had girlfriends who were not into comics, and they just literally said, could we go one conversation without you mentioning comic books? So I was like, fine, I won't say comic books whatsoever. That's when they slowly became illustrated periodicals.
Oh, boy.
And I got into a lot of trouble.
Todd, always with the gentle ribbing.
Oh, most people can take them. You know?
Right. I could think of a couple that can't.
Kill or be killed.
Kill or be killed. I will be there. I hope it actually gets made into a movie. I will certainly go see it and shout it from the mountaintops.
Me too. I'll go see it. Hopefully it's not just optioned. It gets made, like you said.
Okay. So, Valiant, Quantum, and Woody. We've been following the saga of all the crazy stuff that they're doing with all the covers, the variant covers, going back and mining for holofoil and so forth. So just earlier this week, they sent out a press release, and I always enjoy reading their press releases.
Mm-hmm.
So Valiant is proud to announce that Quantum and Woody, the first issue of the all-new and unpredictable ongoing series, has sold out at the distributor level of its upcoming release date and will soon return to store shelves with a special, highly limited second printing. So limited, in fact, that we're only printing one copy and then going back to the press for a third printing. You read that right. To officiate the imminent return of the World's Worst Superhero Team to comic book shops everywhere, Valiant will be producing a single copy second printing of Quantum and Woody. In turn, the relic of comic book collectivity will then be entrusted to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, CBLDF, who are currently hosting an auction of the sole second printing in existence. And all it is just the main cover for issue one with a little thing at the bottom that says, the only second printing in existence. It is currently available as an eBay auction that ends this Sunday. As of Monday, when this went live, it was at about $150. It is currently at, Todd, did you check recently to see what it was at?
I am looking at it right now, good sir.
As of the recording of this episode, it is currently at $1,225. A price suitable for any gentleman, fancy or non-fancy.
Let's just say there is a certain gentleman who may or may not be fancy who is hot over this. Hot. So immediately I, you know, as listeners of the show may know, he likes his Quantum and Woody variants. He was trying to get that, you know, 1 in 250 and blah, blah, blah. So he gets this, and I immediately have to send it off to his Facebook, and he starts griping. And then I get the text later. It's like, and I kind of get what he's saying. I personally love this. I think this is, after the holofoil, gatefold, you know, sticker, blah, 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 just get value, covers of the variant, this to me made me laugh out loud that they stopped the presses for one issue and then it goes straight to third. I'm like, I get every joke that you're doing, but him as a completist, he is like so hot about it. But he made a good point. He's like, because this goes to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Yes.
I honestly think if they hadn't made, just one is funny. And I understand they're trying to grab the headlines and get more eyes on this book. But he was like, what if you had made less second printings and then, you know, sold them for the Legal Defense Fund at a certain amount? Maybe you would make more for the Legal Defense Fund. You know what I'm saying? But I have to see what this ends up going for as a book until I can say that. But I just find it amusing that people are like, oh, the completists will never have the full run of Quantum and Woody first issues.
Let this be a lesson to you. Stop focusing so much on the collectability of comics and just enjoy some comics, eh?
Well, I'm going to say I can enjoy a comic. But there are certain things that I want too. Like I'll get varying, but I don't need them all. But some people can enjoy it and do the other thing, but don't let it envelop your life. I'm not the completist I once was.
Well, again, this is a good way to scare people off from doing that, I think.
Yes, but I cannot wait to find out what this goes for.
I will be watching it very closely.
Mm-hmm.
So the last bit of news, of course, I would say is probably the biggest news. And that is that Disney, for the princely sum of $52.4 billion, purchased Fox. Specifically, 21st Century Fox, the film and two TV studios, Fox News, Fox Business Channel, FS1, FS2, and whatever the Big Ten network are going to be spun into a separate company to remain separate. But obviously, this is the lion's share of everything under the sun, from The Simpsons to Modern Family to all those Marvel properties that we're missing from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're all under the Disney umbrella now.
Oh my God. Do you know what that means, Joe?
If you say that we're going to get a Power Pack Doctor Who crossover, I'm leaving.
We're getting a Power Pack Doctor Who crossover.
All right, I'm leaving.
But either way, the X-Men, all I have to say is when it comes to Doctor Doom and FF and all that, finally, the Doc has come back to Marvel, Joe. So... this is huge. I've had a lot of people talk to me and say that this is bad for entertainment and for consumers, and that like they don't understand that a whole, you know, movie company is getting wiped out and absorbed, monopolies, less choices, less competition. As a fanboy, all you care about is that you're getting your FF and X-Men in the Marvel Universe. And you know what I say to that, Joe? Yes, that's all I care about, is that I'm getting X-Men and FF in the Marvel Universe, and good for it. I can't wait for it. Bring it on.
I don't watch a lot of movies or TV that's not comic book related.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's all in one place, like say there's some sort of Disney-owned streaming service that has all of this stuff in one place... That's better for me. I don't have to split myself up amongst one or two or three even streaming companies.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's great that the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and all that sort of thing is back in. Now, as I'm looking over the list of other things that were included in this and other licensed properties, I go toward the theme park side of things, right?
Right, and then I want to go to something after you're done.
Right, we're going to talk about this for a while because this is huge news. So okay. Disney was already in the midst of making Avatar Land in Disney, at Disney Parks, before they purchased this.
Mm-hmm.
How were they able to do that without actually owning the property?
With Avatar?
Prior to this sale taking place. Ground has been broke. It is being built, as we've spoke, for months. Avatar Land in Animal Kingdom at Disney Parks.
I'm going to go with that's a weird copyright thing where Fox had the rights to distribute, mm-hmm. but I guarantee you Cameron has the rights to those movies.
Okay.
Like, because he had the rights to Terminator. But he had to sell them because he got divorced, and now he's getting them back. I don't know if you know that story.
No.
Okay, so he had the rights to Terminator. When he divorced Linda Hamilton, whether he sold them to pay, like, because he had to get rid of them, or he gave them to Linda in the divorce settlement, I forget what it was. He lost the rights to Terminator. And for some reason, because they're not using them, they revert back to him now. So the next Terminator we're going to get is James Cameron's Terminator again. He's going to be involved, which gives me hope, because the guy knows, whether you like him or not, he knows how to, you know, do a blockbuster movie. But I have the feeling with Avatar, it's the same thing. And that Avatar was after Titanic. He made a ton of money. He probably has a lot of control over those Avatar movies. And he probably has the licensing to, like, for figure, whatever it would be, that's his, probably.
Gotcha.
So.
Now, I mentioned about amusement parks. Obviously, currently over at Universal, they have Marvel, which I'm sure they'll be losing shortly.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Terminator, you know, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure they'll be losing shortly. And they had the Simpsons stuff, which they just recently broke ground on within the last, like, several years. And I'm guessing they'll be losing that as well.
Right. It depends on how long their contract, you know, they like, Disney still has to abide by those contracts. Like, they have the Simpsons in their park as licensed for 15 years. Whatever's left on that contract, they get to do. But I can't see them sinking a whole lot of money into it after that.
Well, I will say this. The one thing not included in this is a Warner Brothers property, in that they're on the California Universal Studios, where they're literally tearing down buildings and amphitheaters that have been there for 100+ years to make the Harry Potter park of the part of the park bigger.
Right.
So I'm sure that Universal is like, you know, we don't really want to lose these Marvel and Simpsons things, but once we do, we could just make Harry Potter, we could just, instead of being Universal Studios, we can just become fully Harry Potter Land.
Right. Which, hey, if that makes some money, by all means.
Or whatever the deal that Six Flags Great Adventures has on the DC properties, whenever those revert back, Universal Studios or whatever can just become Warner Brothers parks, half Harry Potter, half DC Universe park.
They were making... No, there's going to be a DC park somewhere where they're making the cities like a Gotham City and something like that.
Hmm.
I forget what park it was, like, that they're doing something with that. But me, what I find interesting, one of the bigger interesting things, we're going to talk about Star Wars later, is that people didn't realize is that Fox had the rights to the original cut of Star Wars.
Right. I was actually with, you know, Star Wars being in the news, this is something that I was recently made aware of regarding those original cuts.
So it looks like, you know, because the fans always wanted the Han shot first, all blah, blah, blah. I don't know if you know this, Joe, but Disney likes to make money.
That is true.
They are probably going to put out that uncut version for people to buy.
Listen, they didn't spend $54.2 billion to not make that back.
Mm.
Now, and again, I will say this. There are tons and tons of people who want those original versions of the original Star Wars trilogy. I being one of them. The versions of those that I have on DVD were legally acquired from the Laserdisc versions of those.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed. So, again, it may not be the best quality, of course. So, you know, if Disney wants to put out just a little cleaned up, you know, we don't need 15 dewbacks. We don't need extra rocks around to make the world look more full or whatever was going on with George Lucas there. I might even break down and buy a Blu-ray player so I could own the original trilogy on Blu-ray, and those would be the only Blu-ray discs that I would own.
Oh my goodness, you'd cave and get a Blu-ray? Oh.
Bite my tongue, but I would do it.
Mm.
So the one last thing about the parks that I want to mention is I know there was an announcement earlier this year that Universal had also acquired the rights to do like a Nintendo World as well.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there's going to be a separate Warner Brothers DC franchise parks, if Universal essentially just becomes Harry Potter Land and Nintendo Land, I'm okay.
You would go to that one.
We, Ace and I would drop April off in the Harry Potter Land, and then we would become Mario.
You're a wizard, Mario!
No.
No?
No wizard costume in the new Mario game. Oh, I was lamenting that there's not a chicken outfit either.
What? This chicken outfit?
So, what was the other thing that you wanted to bring up?
There was Star Wars, the original cut.
Okay.
So I slipped it in there seamlessly.
So a couple of the other properties that we didn't mention that are included with the purchase is a bunch of properties that are currently being put out by Dark Horse Comics. Mm-hmm. Such things as Aliens, Predator, Alien vs. Predator, also the Prometheus stuff. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Firefly, the Fight Club comic book that they put out recently, a lot of those licensed property. I wonder where, like, the Conan books and stuff fall, or is that just Dark Horse in perpetuity?
I think that's Dark Horse owns that, because this I do know about the Conan license is when the guy who created, I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Arthur Conan Doyle.
I thought he was the one who did Sherlock Holmes.
I think you're right.
I know his name because they used to have a bit, they used to have a strip with him in the back of the Dark Horse Comics.
Robert E. Howard. I was close.
Robert E. Howard committed suicide? And I believe the rights, like, because there was no real succession. He didn't have kids or anything like that. So I want to say that either, like, that the rights were given to, like, a hospital so that they could, like, you know, as a donation, and they have the rights to it. So, like, somebody, like, Fox doesn't own those at all when they at Dark Horse. That's a property that is licensed separately. So I don't see them going over to any of that stuff.
Interesting. So yeah, again, this is a big deal. And again, obviously I'm torn, you know, with Disney owning so much of what's out there in popular culture. But in the last like 5 to 10 years, the stuff that Disney has put out has been really good.
Yes, but the only thing is I do feel really bad for Dark Horse as a comic company.
Okay.
Because when those contracts are up, it is basically what Marvel/Disney did to Dark Horse when they took that really good Star Wars comic away.
Oh.
Remember when they took that away? And you know, obviously Jason Aaron was really good and the Darth Vader book, all great. But that was their bread and butter for years. And then they were like, all right, we don't have that. We have Aliens and Predator. Let's fall back on that.
Mm-hmm.
When they pull all this away, if this all goes, Dark Horse will cease as a comic book company. I don't know what properties that they will get unless they can step up as a Image / Vertigo comic company. But I have a feeling that in a few years' time, Dark Horse may be no more because of this.
Well, Disney can just purchase them.
That is true. Because I don't see Marvel putting out a Predator and a Alien comic and all that. They're going to need like a separate entity. Do you know what I mean? Because they only got Star Wars because that's going to make them money. And that probably sells better than most of their Marvel comics, the Star Wars books. But I don't see them doing even a great Predator book or a great Alien book getting the numbers that Star Wars does. So maybe they would buy Dark Horse and just be like, all right, go do these properties. You know what I mean? Like, you were doing good with them. Go keep doing them.
Right. We shall see.
Mm-hmm.
So again, big news. We'll see how everything starts shaking out. We'll see what the first announcement is. I do like everyone being cute that they were sent like spoilers of Infinity War of extra scenes that were put on to put Wolverine in the movie and all this other nonsense. Bless you for trying. But I don't believe nothing until it's announced on Marvel's official terrible website.
Oh, boy.
There are no conventions this weekend, Todd.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Everyone stay home with your family. And that includes you, comic book creators and former cast members of Starsky and Hutch's.
Huggy Bear.
So while you're not attending conventions this weekend, you can catch up on back episodes of all the shows on the Soon to Be Named Network over at soontobenamednetwork.com or soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com, where you could find all the episodes of Longbox Heroes, Longbox Heroes After Dark. Anytime they go up, and I remember to put them on the site, they go up on the site. Just like episodes of Fresher in Parlance, Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, which I was on again this past week, AIM Downsides Podcast, Talkin' Gimmicks, Paladins of Voltron, and listen, I'm feeling generous. Go back and listen to old episodes of Prime Defective if you like Star Trek, the best reviewed Star Trek podcast on all of iTunes.
And reviews are important.
That's right. Go back and listen to old episodes of Prodigal Sons podcast, and of course, as always, listen to Podvocacy. I would say, like, at least in the top three of shows on the network.
Okay.
This past week, they had a bunch of TV talk regarding shows that we don't watch, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gifted, and they also had a very lengthy discussion with Jeremy of Paladins of Voltron about the internal nuances and therein of Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Ooh.
And I want to say, Jeremy knows his stuff. I'd like to put him and my friend Andy on Twitter in a head-to-head Star Wars challenge to see who could out-obscure each other. You know, I'm good on the original trilogy. A lot of that focus being on the first two of the three films, but once you start getting into that expanded universe, I'm out. You know.
I knew a little bit of that, but not a lot.
I could pick Grand Admiral Thrawn out of a lineup, and that's about it.
Eobard Thrawn?
Yes, the Reverse Flash of the Star Wars universe.
That would be really cool.
Imagine when Marvel buys DC and they can do the Star Wars Justice League crossover.
Oh, jeez.
What was the other one? In addition to like all the people, like, oh man, a friend of mine is on the set in Wolverine's in Infinity War. It's like something, something. This big Fox deal. Now we can finally get our Star Wars Simpsons crossover. It's like, all right, everybody calm down. Well, watch a Star Wars Simpsons crossover. Let's not say it's a joke just yet.
The last thing I want to say about that Disney-Fox merger is that they don't have Namor still.
Oh.
Namor was
then a why even comic. Bother, Todd?
Exactly.
$54.2 million and you don't get Namor? What are we doing?
Namor's at another company.
Oh, let's buy them too.
Why
anyone
not?
Got another $54.2 billion laying around? I need the Submariner.
The Submariner, Joe.
Oh, my goodness. bitten by a radioactive submarine, the first mutant in the Marvel universe.
That's right. He got the proportional powers of a submarine.
Namor's as useful as a screen door on a submarine. How do you like them apples, huh?
Oh, boy.
Come at me, Namor fans. At me, as they say. Or don't they say, don't at me, when they have, like, it's like, hey, here's my unpopular opinion. Don't at me. It's like, that's no, right. Hey, here's my correct opinion. Please at me so I can tell you you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like my picture of my sandwich from a couple weeks ago.
You had a sandwich picture?
I did.
Oh, boy.
So, of course, the link will be in the show notes for Soon to Be Named Network and soontobenamednetwork.com. Anytime anybody from any of these shows appear in any other shows, it'll be linked there as long as they remember to send me a link and I remember to put the link up. It's a whole intricate 2 or 3 layer process.
They have to tell me I have to do it. It's tough.
Right. They have to tell me I have to do it and then I actually have to do it.
Oh.
Todd, the things that I do.
You should put them in my hands and watch
them. I do
them.
Both of them. So also included in this is all the links to all the sales that are going on. Some of the sales are holdovers from the last couple weeks. Some of them are just kind of like readjusted sales that they did. Like all the Star Wars stuff is still on sale through Marvel. Then there's like what they're calling the massive Marvel sale, where it's a ton of newer Marvel stuff that's been released in the calendar year 2017. Titan is having a sale on all of their stuff for 2017. Boom and IDW are having a sale on their stuff, either 50 or 55% off those two. Just be wary, you have to put in a coupon code to get your stuff, to get the sale on those. DC, on the other hand, is having what they're calling a holiday sale, which is tons and tons of graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and Rebirth single issues. And of course, whenever there's Rebirth single issues on sale, I would be remiss not to mention that to you, the listeners of the show. I don't mind repeating this because this is important information. The first 15 issues of every one of the DC Rebirth releases are on sale for 99 cents a pop. So if you were waiting on those for whatever reason, you could certainly get those at a discounted rate. All the trade, now this is the other thing. All the trades, Todd, are $5 a pop, $4.99. Whether it be a trade that collects one oversized issue, or it's a giant trade that collects a ton of stuff. Everything's $5.
Yeah.
So again, your mileage may vary only because of, you know, some of the stuff that you're getting versus what you're not getting. And by that I mean, like, The Killing Joke is on sale for $5, right? Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's in The Killing Joke is The Killing Joke. And as much as I enjoy, and we talk about it all the time because it's always on sale, you know, Dark Knight Returns, it's essentially 3 issues. It's on sale for $5. Okay, that's a great deal for $5. You know, it's hard to pass up. And the books that we always say that, like, just should be perennially on sale, because the way that DC has been doing their sales of late, it seems as though they're always on sale. Like, all of the Sandman run is on sale, and they've added a couple new ones that weren't in there from previous, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they have the dust covers, they have that manga at Death's Door, they have those Delirium, like almost like kid books, right. The art by Jill Thompson, those weren't in there before. But for me, the best bang for your buck, just at a quick passing glance, is the what was published as an oversized hardcover that collects the first 16 issues of Jeff Johns' JSA for $5.
That's some good reading.
That's crazy. I thought it was a misprint. But no, it's the first 16 issues of that book. And I'm certain then, if that's on sale for $5, probably all of those JLI trades are $5. I wonder if...
You're going to check on something, Joe?
Yeah, I'm going to check to see if the JLI hardcover got in there.
The Omnibias?
The Omnibias, yes. Give me one moment.
You take all the time. Anytime it comes to JLI and you're going to find something out, I'll let you take some time. I don't know if you know, that's one of my favorite little runs, Joe.
But... Hmm...
Did you find it?
So they have the trades, of course. The trades are $5 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
As mentioned. Let me see, is the hardcover in there? No, the Omnibuy is not in there.
Right, well that's so new.
Yeah, well that's the thing. They claim that they're like, oh, here's new releases that are included in there. And I know that's like very new, but I wasn't sure how new they meant new was.
And you know what? It's a good deal for the Omnibuy digitally, whatever you get, because the pages are in order and all the word balloons are filled in.
Right, and that's the thing about that. Not only is it probably fixed, if there was a mistake and they find out about it, they fix it in your already purchased digital edition.
Right, and I know for a fact that it wasn't messed up in the digital format, because when I was reading articles, they were like, I don't know why it's wrong in the printers, because it was fine when it first, you know, printed out at the in digitally, so God only knows what's going on with DC on that.
Right, so no new freebies. Those new freebies that Marvel just put up a week or two ago are already, like, the links are already dead, and they mm-hmm. have not replaced them with anything.
Right.
Probably because they have so many sales on, they don't want to give you stuff for free, you know, when there's stuff that you could buy, even super cheap.
Right, and it's Christmas, so. Just kidding.
And it's Christmas. So. let's get into what we read from this past week. Todd, I'm going to let you kick things off with Action Comics number 993, written by Dan Jurgens with art by not Dan Jurgens?
By Dan Jurgens.
Oh, okay. Well, it says the cover was by him, and then it says Brett Booth and Joe Prado were the artists.
Well, okay, I'm looking at it right now, and it says Dan Jurgens story and pencil art. Joe Prado and Cam Smith finished ink art. So gotcha. I don't know what, like, how much. It could have been Dan just did layout. You know what I mean? That's, when you get into that stuff, it's, your guess is as good as mine. But as of the last issue of Action, at the end, Superman found out that Mr. Oz may be his father, Jor-El. So he decided to confirm it and go back and see if when Krypton exploded, another ship left or what happened. He doesn't know. So he decides to use the Flash's cosmic treadmill in the JLA, watchtower, which is either on the moon or on a satellite. I'm not 100% sure by this book. So Booster Gold shows up to tell him to stop. He misses him by a second. And so now he's got to go find him. He's looking at the cosmic treadmill. Flash shows up and they get in a fight. Superman is shunted off to Krypton, but while he's there, he gets side shuffled instead of where he wants to go. And while he's doing that, he's seeing familiar images of Krypton that he's seen before on, you know, in history tapes, and then other things that don't seem quite right. So he's not sure what he's seeing. And then he is on Krypton, like, way before it exploded, supposedly. We're not 100% sure. And he sees Jor-El and Zod working together, which isn't right. And while all this is going on, the fight with the Flash, Booster gets away and starts to go find Superman, because he's like, well, if he's on Krypton before it explodes, this could be a huge bad thing for the timeline, because if he gets killed and God forbid he saves Krypton, as great as that would be disastrous. So he decides to go, but before he goes, he decides to post. Dan Jurgens didn't get the memo that you have to use fake social medias, and decides to report that he's going to save Superman, and he puts it on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr, Joe.
Oh, man, Tumblr.
Yes, because Skeets says, he's like, hey, Skeets, what's popular? And he's like, Booster, in your time, it's Twitter, Facebook, and I believe there are several risque Tumblrs with your, and he's like, forget it, just post it. He's like, so I like that. I think it was like last week or the week before, we were talking about how they use fake social media ones.
Right.
And Dan obviously didn't get the message. There's a small sub B plot of Lois finding out that her general father, who she's estranged with, was on a mission to a third world country, and he got captured and is going to be executed. So Lois is going off to do something about that. But the main story is still the Oz thing. So it was an enjoyable issue. It looked good. Very cool to see a very Dan Jurgensy Booster Gold. It's still weird to see a Dan Jurgens looking Superman without the red trunks on.
Yes.
I can't get my head around that. But it was an enjoyable story. If you're a Booster fan, it was very Dan Jurgens boosterific. Just the first part of the story, so it was good, and I'm interested to see where it goes.
When Dan Jurgens draws Booster in as close to the classic costume, if not the classic costume, as it gets, there's nothing better.
Right, and this is as close as it gets, I think.
I know, didn't he do the art when they did the new 52 Justice League International or something that had Booster Gold in it? It was like the new fancy costume?
I don't think he would, because it was Aaron Lopresti who was doing the Justice League New 52.
For some reason, I have a vague recollection of Jurgens doing a piece. Maybe it was a variant cover or something.
Maybe it was those Convergence books?
Something. Yeah, but it looked weird him doing the new costume.
There was a Futures End where the pre-New 52 booster met the New 52 booster.
That's what it was.
And and Jurgens actually drew the both versions. And you're like, man, that classic version's so much better.
Yep. So moving on, Mr. Miracle number 5, written by Tom King with art by Mitch Gerards. Scott Free has been sentenced to death by the new Highmaster. He has one last night on Earth, so he spends it with his wife, Big Barda, and they do wifely things. marital relations, if you will, and they also go to an amusement park. But most importantly, is this the first new appearance of Funky Flashman?
Yes. So, and he looks a lot like someone we know, even more than usual.
Whatever do you mean, Todd?
Oh.
And as I read the word balloons, I heard it in that voice.
That's right, because we are two believers, me and Joe. Get it? Two believers?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I was going to say it twice for emphasis.
So it's difficult to talk about this book because it's a 12-issue maxi series, if you will. It's in the middle of a storyline. It's hitting up to a big, crucial point in the series. But I would certainly say that this is the best issue so far because it was the most linear, if that makes any sense.
There wasn't a lot of, like, wacky, seems like...
There still was some. There was still some of the story being told a little bit out of order, but not as much as there had been in previous issues. Whereas I think once this whole thing is collected, it's going to read great together in a trade paperback or a hardcover, not a graphic novel.
Right.
Or if you have all 12 single issues and you read them all back to 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 back, it'll be great.
You counted those, didn't you?
What was that?
You actually counted them.
No, I didn't. I hope for the best.
Oh, boy.
I would
have counted them.
If there was a standalone issue of the series so far, this is the one. So this is the one that I would recommend the most.
And I think what stands out about it is, as much as, you know, I've loved a lot of Tom King stuff, I've never seen, like, in all his stuff, and with a lot of other writers, I've never seen a more believable relationship than Scott and Barda.
Yes.
And we've said this over and over and over again. But like you said, the moment where they, you know, they have wifely, husbandly stuff, it's touching and fun and a nice nod to, like, you know, the whole thing that Mr. Miracle is about. Just to see Mr. Miracle walking along in a Flash t-shirt is fantastic. And Garrett's artwork or whatever. I got his name wrong probably. Just how day stuff can look. Like I said, just him walking down the street with Barda in a Flash t-shirt to Barda in her Barda outfit with a cosmic, you know, the cosmic rod and all this stuff. It's just, he could do both, and it's seamless from one to the other. And I thoroughly love this issue too.
So if you've been sleeping on this, I'm sure once issue 6 comes out, they'll do like the half collection.
I wonder, because it seems like everything, I mean, Vision was, but the Omega Men was all one shot. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling they'll just trade this as a 12-parter when it's done. I think King has earned it at this point with DC.
I wouldn't be surprised if they quadruple dip on this. The two trades.
Mm-hmm.
First half, second half. Then they do the hardcover. Then they do the omnibus director's cut deleted material collection.
And then in there, they have issue 1 and 2 reprinted with extra stuff. You know, like when they did that with the Vision, like the director's cut issues actually. Like, yeah, just DC is like, when they get in the office, they're like, what are we going to do with that Mr. Miracle? We're going to double dip? No, we're going to dip all over the place.
Mm-hmm. So our preview review book for this week is a book that's in stores today. It's a book that you've maybe heard us mention one time, two times, three times on the show. And the day is finally here, December 20th, 2017. Quantum and Woody number 1, written by past guest of the show, Daniel Kibblesmith, with art by Kano. Hey, you like Quantum and Woody? You like this. Moving on. No, just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So the plot of this book is more of the same of Quantum and Woody. I think it does a very good job of explaining to you the disparate personalities of these two brothers, as it were. They have a superpower where each has a wristband a la Captain Marvel of Marvel Comics fame, and for their powers to continue to work, they have to clang their wristbands together once a day.
Right.
However, that works good if you're a partner team, but something causes a rift between the two brothers. And one brother's life changes for the worse, and one brother's life changes for, it's about even. And then there's a big cliffhanger at the end that is something that they've never revealed before, I don't think, in all the different series of the book.
Not that I can think of.
So that's a pretty big deal. And then, of course, it's kind of like a double cliffhanger. Eric, who is Quantum, finds out information about their family. And much like a movie we're going to talk about later on, Woody, a.k.a. Woody, is seduced by the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And by the dark side, I mean a scantily clad lady with a stick and the living embodiment of a shrub.
Her henchman. Yes.
So, what did you think of this, Todd?
I really enjoyed it. I laughed. I was actually touched by a few moments in the book. Woody's absolutely hysterical. Quantum is so humdrum at times. It's perfect. I thought the art was really interesting. I like the way Kano does some things with small panels within the panels to show you important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which really makes your eye go right to things that you need and some of the jokes that you need or important, you know, plot points or whatever. So overall, I think it all really came together, and I had one or two laugh out loud moments. So between the written in jokes and Kano's ability to pull off visual gags, I'm really happy with the first issue of Quantum and Woody, this new run. Really, really happy. How about you?
100%. We did hype it up a little bit on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as Valiant themselves hyped it up. And as much hype as you can do with a book like this, as much goofiness as you could do with all the gimmicks and whatnot, if there's not an actually good story to hang your hat on, then all of that's for naught.
Exactly.
And Valiant really could have done this with any book. And then after that first issue comes out, and if it was a stinker, then they would have just wasted months and months of all these gimmicks and flim-flams and hoo-has, the likes of which a funky Flashman would blush over. But the fact that it's a really good book, and I know because of us talking about it, a lot of people who listen to the show have picked up the book. We thank you very much. We recommend you picking this up. You do not need to know the quote-unquote intricate backstory of Quantum and Woody to understand what this is. They are brothers, they are completely opposite ends of the spectrum, and their superpowers are connected by the bands that they have to touch once a day. That's all you need to know.
Exactly.
Everything else they give you in this book. Now, I'm sure there's going to be other stuff that plays off the past stories. I'm sure there's going to be new status quo shakeups and things of that nature. But I feel as though these characters are in good hands, and I really do hope that more and more people check this out, and I hope that we were just a small part of that.
Right. And I think it's going to get bigger if the TV show is a hit at all.
Yes, the TV show. I haven't heard anything about the TV show in quite some time, but...
Other than that Community guy that you like.
Right. Well, that was a little while ago that the Joel McHale announcement came out.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it was a good announcement. I like Joel McHale. He's good.
You do like your McHales. His Navy and everything.
Right. So that's what we've read from this week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, emphasis on that or so today, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, how it is that you get your books. Be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out. Don't have to be making rash decisions and crossing things off because you have to buy your children Christmas presents. Or family members or loved ones or so forth. Some hard choices were made this week, Todd.
Oh, boy.
So we both put up, Todd and I put up what we're getting this week. We attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, and we're also keeping a running tally of the books that we purchased in the calendar year 2017. Next year is dollar amount. I'm sure tomorrow, after I see the money go through, after what I pick up today at the shop, I will be weeping. So looking at your list, Todd, I am going, and Todd has, there's no chance. There's only two more weeks left, this one included. Todd has five correct guesses on me. Is this 4 years in a row that you've beaten me on this?
I think so. I have this random, you know, wild card, weeks a lot, so.
Right. I don't think this is a wild card week. I think the book that you are most looking forward to coming out this week is Marvel 2-in-1 number one.
Yes. And you know what the funny thing is? Even if we hadn't done the preview review, it probably would have been Marvel 2-in-1.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I like Quantum Woody, you know I like you. I like my ever-loving Benjamin Grimm.
Well, when this book was 2 to 3 weeks late, I kind of had to shuffle the deck chairs so that we can do Quantum and Woody on the show and not have it be our pick of the week.
What?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at your books, and is it also Marvel 2-in-1?
It is 2-in-1 numero uno. That's correct.
Yay. Look at us.
Hey, I understand the Fantastic Four may be coming back.
And I think we had a great conversation at the shop. It's like, it might be a lot faster if the search for Reed and Sue might be a lot quicker than we thought it was going to be.
They might be lighting a fire. Well, when we picked up our books this past week, the deal had not been announced about Disney purchasing Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, boy, if this deal goes through, you know, this six-issue arc plus another six-issue arc to put the Fantastic Four back together might get truncated real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So head over, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the stuff that we've ever done on the internet, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark with the final episode of Gallifrey Burns coming up this Friday. Or is it?
What?
Also, all the past pull posts, all the past Todd and Joe Have Issues, anything that we've ever done on the internet exists over at longboxheroes.com, as well as the little link for a store where you could purchase our fancy logo, either on a sticker or a shirt. I think next year we're going to have new shirts that just respect the opinion. Okay. I think two people might buy that shirt. Me being one of them.
Okay.
But if you don't want a sticker, you don't want a shirt, you can click that Amazon banner across the top of the page. Does not cost you a cent more, but it does give us a couple shekels on the back end. They call it advertising revenue, as though you, the listener of the show, did not know Amazon existed without us telling you about it. If you're willing to play that game, we're willing to play that game as well. Some of the notable purchases through the Amazon click-through this past week. Someone purchased the trade paperback of Infinity Gauntlet, getting ready for a movie of a similar name. Someone, and I'm guessing the same person, purchased the trade paperback collections of the Star Wars comic book Poe Dameron, of Han Solo, and a San Diego Comic-Con black and white variant of a Star Wars comic book. Someone also purchased, and again I think these purchases were from the same person, a Funko Pop Teen Titans Raven in pink, a Funko Rock Candy Starfire collectible vinyl figure, and the book that I did not know exists, and now I need it for my own collection, Teen Titans Go Burger vs. Burrito. And I would also want to point out and thank the person who purchased the Casa Calacusi Costume Mask Prop Horror Hockey Halloween Myers. Now, all of those words may just sound like some sort of boggle jumble, but it was actually a really cool replica mask of the Jason Voorhees hockey mask. Nothing to do with Michael Myers. Not sure why his name's in the description. Now, one last thing before we... two things I want to throw in here that I forgot to mention at the top of the show or during the course of the show. We're going to open up our Christmas gifts to each other here in just a second.
Oh, boy.
But I also want to thank the boys over at Place to Be Nation, specifically the podcast Through, and that's THROH, The Years, where they're doing a chronological review of all the past Ring of Honor shows, which was right in the heart of my fandom of independent wrestling. Trevor and Matt are doing a fantastic job on that podcast, and they gave me and us a shout-out on it this week.
By us, you mean me too?
They mentioned longboxheroes.com. They don't know you, Todd. Nobody knows you. But no. They mentioned the podcast and the website. So thank you very much, guys.
That's good. Can anyone really know me, Joe?
Well, they think they know you, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
You're just too mysterious. Hiding up in the rafters. You should give people an opportunity to at least give them at least 5 seconds of your time to take a nice picture of you.
That is true.
At least pose for the picture. So am I opening up my gift first, or are you opening up your gifts first?
I don't know. Do you want to do the art attack first, or do you want
to do... Oh, yeah. Todd, were there any art attacks this week?
Only mine.
What?
And I just, for randomly no reason, a few days ago, posted my Mike McCone Dr. Doom head sketch. Just because.
Just because you were feeling silly?
Yeah, I was feeling silly. There was no news that had to do with Dr. Doom at the time.
But and I saw you changed your Abadah on Twitter to Dr. Doom as well.
That's right, my George Perez Dr. Doom.
Mm-hmm. And I think you missed it. I know I got a chance to tweet it. He may not have... Oh, Euronymous actually did tweet out another page from Aaron Axel Voigt's Serenity Rose, but he didn't put Dart Attack on it.
Well, that's why I didn't know.
Right. I saw it, so...
Don't blame me.
I'm not blaming no one, I'm just saying. I remember I saw something else, and I'm like, why did Todd tweet it? I'm like, oh yeah, he didn't tag Todd's art attack in it.
Not my fault. But anyway, who do you think we should go first?
I will go first.
So good, because I don't want you to be second.
Right.
That classic wrapping.
Sealed the bag this time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've sealed it in the past. Hey! Books. Nobody loves books more than me.
I know. I
and
hope you don't
have
them. And
this is actually two books that I've been waiting on the audiobook versions of them, and they just haven't come out, at least through the channels that I get my audiobooks through.
Right.
And I'm very excited. One is called Norm Macdonald, Based on a True Story, Not a Memoir, by Norm Macdonald. Now, the foreword here is by Louis C.K., and I find that very problematic.
Oh, boy. Throw it away.
The other one is a book called The Comedians by Cliff Nesteroff, which is the seedy underbelly of the early days of comedy back to, like, the late 1800s up to the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done, like, little mini podcasts about it, and I have been looking forward to getting into these books. Now, I am very behind on my actual comic books, but these are going to take huge precedence over some of those books.
Now, when you say actual comic books, or do you mean actual books?
Well, actual books, yes, but these are jumping, like, very high to the...
Okay, because you said I'm behind on my actual comic books, and I was like, I think he means actual books.
Both.
Okay.
Both. So Todd has two packages there in front of him.
Two
big packages. One is more rectangular, and the other one is more square.
Okay, hold on one second. Ah!
If you know shapes...
One is more square, and one is more rectangular. Which one did you say open first?
The rectangular-shaped one.
Okay, I'm going with the rectangular-shaped one. Oh, my goodness. I want sound so everybody can hear. This is me ripping stuff. I got an Amazon Prime box.
All right.
He's my favorite Transformer. Oh, popped it open. Some stuffing. Oh, pens.
Mm-hmm.
Are these your favorite Uniball pens?
Those are some fancy Uniball pens, yes, sir.
Is that an AC/DC sticker?
Yes, it is.
Oh, the only sticker I make. Oh, my goodness. Did I get Oakland Raiders stickers?
Multiple Oakland Raiders stickers, that's correct.
I got a blue... who is that?
The giant blue... Then I just threw some other random stickers in there.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to figure out, because, you know, you gave me AC/DC and Raiders, so I'm like, all right, there. And Scott Hall. This is the bad sticker.
Right. The bad guy sticker.
I got a composition notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why these are great, Joe?
Why, Todd?
Because if somebody asks you for a piece of paper, you could say, no, it's a composition notebook, and the other side will fall out.
Right. So Todd had joked about starting the obsessive-compulsive behavior that I do, where I have my notebook of all the books that I get, so I can keep track of those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
So now Todd has the Joe obsessive-compulsive or disorder starter kit.
I do, and I like the fact that it's an AC/DC sticker, and like, those are stickers that I would actually stick
right
stuff on. So should I open the other one?
Now you can open up the other package. This okay. That one was sort of the gag gift, if you will.
Not a gag gift, that's the good gift. All right there. Oh my goodness, is this the messenger bag to put that notebook in?
No, you have your own messenger bag.
Yes, it's an AC/DC messenger bag, and it is falling apart. Oh, boy, let's see what we got here. Oh, it's the Unforgiven 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray version.
Yeah, buddy.
All right. Now all I need is the laser disc, and I'm done.
I didn't know how to fold that up into the box.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Joe. This
no
goes
problem.
In the,
Merry Christmas, Todd.
Merry Christmas, Joe. This goes in the Unforgiven collection.
Right.
Yay.
All right. So, Todd and Joe have issues.
Yes.
This is the Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special. And since this was your pick, you get to go.
Right. This is the short version is... Lobo fights Santa Claus to the death. But what a lot of people forget about this is when they talk about this is that the story starts out with a family in space who celebrate Christmas. It all works on paper, Joe. and they've hit a run of bad luck. They have a bunch of children, and they're afraid of what those children are going to do when they find out that they have no presents in the morning. So in the spirit of Christmas, they decide maybe they should murder them all. But luckily, a book shows up on their front porch that says, read this book to your children, and we 100% guarantee that they will not harm you from, you know, because they didn't get any presents. So the parents decide, well, we might as well read this book because it's our only shot. Otherwise, we have to go murder all our children. They decide to read the books to themselves first to get an idea of what it is. And it's the fact that the Easter Bunny, and he doesn't name names, but says a couple of the other holiday people have decided to put the hit out on Santa Claus because he's destroying, they can't compete with turkeys and presents and Christmas trees and lights and toys. So Lobo takes the job, goes up to the North Pole, and takes on Chris, the Crusher Kringle, who is a dictator who is wanted by Amnesty International. He runs his empire with an iron fist. He has a planned malnutrition to keep his army small in stature but fighting fit, and they're fierce as ferrets. So he goes up there, gives the elves the what for, and then ends up, like I said, getting in a machete fight, of all things, with Santa Claus. Finding the naughty and the good list, figuring that the good kids are going to be good victims. He'll be able to abuse them, and the naughty kids could turn out to be competition. So he decides to use Santa's ability to get all around the world really fast to build weapons of mass destruction to nuke all the bad little kids that will be competition. And that story's supposed to be, hey, you don't want to be bad because Lobo will come for you instead of Santa Claus now. But you find out that the book is only good for one reading, and now the parents have to go upstairs and do something horrible to their children. And then, once again, in Christmas spirit, Lobo gives us the middle finger at the end.
And so does his dog.
Oh, yes, dog, spelled D-A-W.
Of course. This was a fun read.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know why at the beginning. This was published originally in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know why it said there was like parental advisory and all this other jazz on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the part where Lobo starts killing the elves in a very graphic manner, even for today's standard.
Right.
Yeah.
Simon Bisley goes crazy on this issue.
He absolutely does.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a treat, and I think Lobo killing the elves is, to me, a better art experience than the actual fight between Lobo and Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Still good, but those elves bite the bucket in some grisly, grisly ways.
Mm-hmm. Lobo has never been this grisly since, I think.
Oh, this was like the last of it?
If it wasn't the last of it, it was close,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think they ever got to these heights again. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like, even, like, there was some early on stuff, and then he became the Wolverine of DC,
yeah.
If you know what I mean? Like, he was in everything, and then once he got the ongoing, he was really neutered, because he's a one-trick pony that they went to the well way too many times with them. So that kind of just did them in. But this was early on, and this is one of those that I just love. I remember getting this and not knowing what it, like, and just dying, like, laughing, reading this. Because this was really different in the 1990s when the time it came out. There was nothing, like, at DC going on in the mainstream books like this.
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And, this was a fun read. It was a fun, even though it was like 48 pages, so a little bit larger than normal, mm-hmm. it was a fun, light read.
Right. And it came with, at the time, not that you could buy them yourselves, but promotional material that had, they were really gross Christmas decorations. There was like they were like paper punch outs that you would put. Remember when you buy at this time, especially, you just get like paper decorations to put on the wall at Christmas, and they were like stockings with like a foot and a bone in it with like Lobo comics in the stocking with it. And then there was like Lobo, like string with little squares on it that said like Lobo and Merry Christmas and stuff like that. I had them years and years ago, and I think my mother threw them out. And I'm still to this day looking for to replace them.
Oh my goodness.
So I just thought you'd find that interesting as information.
Very interesting. Quite the collector's item there.
So what's the next week's Todd and Joe Have Issues, which will be the last of the year of Todd and Joe Have Issues?
Well, again, we're going to stick with another holiday themed book. And if I go back through the history of Todd and Joe Have Issues, it seems as though the book that we probably pulled the most from has been Starman.
Okay.
And this is yet another Starman issue. It's issue number 27, which is a Christmas issue.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Starman 27.
Starman 27 for next week. And that is the final. Yeah.
Yes.
And then, I don't know, we're going to replace, I think, we're gonna do a mailbag. Any emails that come in, any comments on the site, any personal and private conversations that you have with Todd and I via digital medium is going to be fodder for the show in this spot for 2018.
Yes. We're bringing, what was it? We're bringing back the mailbag like DC did, tried to, with... back in the day.
They did for like a couple weeks.
And had some really good art to announce it.
It certainly did. Did not one of us, maybe one of us get a letter printed in Secret Six?
I thought it was, maybe it was Dave.
I think I did. I was either
me or you.
I don't think it was Dave.
It wasn't me.
Then it was definitely me.
Was it me? I don't think it was me.
I think it was me.
I got one in the Flash annual years ago that I asked why the Flash is so grumpy.
Right, that's different.
Yes.
So, we're going to get into TV and movie talk here to close things out, unless I forgot something.
No, I think we're good.
Okay. So, for TV talk, again, spoiler talk about the Punisher Netflix show and The Last Jedi. So, you don't care, you didn't see it, you don't want it spoiled, I think, at this point. Everyone but me has watched all of The Punisher, and everyone in the world has seen Star Wars. So, we bid you adieu if you don't want it spoiled or you don't care. First episode of The Punisher, starring Jon Bernthal as The Punisher. A.K.A. Frank Castle, A.K.A. Pete Castellano. as Todd had mentioned, this takes place a little bit after the events of Daredevil Season 2.
Right.
And we begin the episode with Punisher killing everyone finally. Like, everything is wrapped up. Like, from the murder of his family in Central Park up to the very last person who was even tangentially involved with that murder has now been killed by the Punisher. And before the credits roll, the Punisher has quit being the Punisher. So I'm already upset because I hate that. The Punisher, under normal circumstances, should never quit being the Punisher.
Right.
Because he's the Punisher. He has this rage inside of him. He has this thing that was awoken when his family was killed, and he must kill and kill forever.
Right. See, that's the thing, like, about the difference between the comic one and the Netflix one, is because the Netflix one, his family was killed by a commanding officer in the Daredevil Season 2, and over this drug thing, and so I don't like that, because I always like that it was just a mafia hit that he got caught in the crossfire,
right,
and then he gets to murder forever, because there will always be mafia to take the place, but once you kill the people who killed your family, like, you know what I mean, it's personal, you can end it. even though it doesn't end, as you'll see, like the killing doesn't end. Spoiler alert, he may become the Punisher again. But
right, so there's a B-plot of a new cop who comes to the force, and she was over in Kuwait or Saudi Arabia or one of those countries where the Punisher was fighting when he was in the war, when he was in the service. And she is investigating that, which is going to lead her to be on the trail of the Punisher. But again, we get a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever the cop is that they assign her with, he's like, oh, they don't take you seriously because they put you with me.
Mm-hmm.
But the Punisher's... So the Punisher lives in a one-room Fleabag motel. He grew his hair and his beard out. And Todd, after, you know, what, 3 seasons of Legends of Tomorrow and however many seasons of The Flash that we've watched.
Right.
It was jarring, Todd. Nearly jarring to see a person who actually grew a beard that was actually part of their person for a role they were playing on a TV show instead of just slap dashing some hair off the floor of a barbershop and hoping for the best.
Not fair, though. That's not fair.
What?
Because Shane had a long time to grow that beard, which they're going to shave off after the first episode. If you need a beard for the middle of a season, you just don't have time to grow a playoff beard the way John Barenthal did.
Or you do all those scenes as pickups while he still has the beard. You don't shoot in chronological order.
No, but I'm... Oh, you're killing me.
Anyway, so, and his job, apparently, is the best wall sledgehammerer in all of New York.
I love that, though.
This is a huge construction outfit with equipment and cement mixers and more than one person on the payroll. And his job is just as a solo man with a solo sledgehammer to knock down walls. And you know what, Todd? He's the best at it.
He is. And you know what's funny? That's the way they're doing the elevator at the local parking establishment where we have our comic shop, so don't laugh.
Is it the Punisher doing it?
I think it is.
Is it Pete Castanelli or whatever his name is?
Yes, Castellani or whatever
his
it is.
His fake name?
Well, it sounds a lot like Castle, so when they say Castle, he's like, oh, that's me. But then they keep going with the rest of the name.
Right. So, the... Other people that are on the job with him don't like him because he's different. They think he's slow,
mm-hmm.
but they don't use that word or words. And then there's a new guy who comes to the job. He's kind of torn between, like, hey, I'm not part of this crew that makes fun of Pete. But Pete seems like an okay guy, the way he swings that sledgehammer. They did step on his sandwich, so I'll give him half of my sandwich and I'll feel bad. And I'll feel better about myself than those construction guys lose out on some money to a loan shark, so they're going to go hold up a underground poker game. Frank Castle overhears this. They kind of get in his face a little bit. They go and they try to do the deal with the new guy on the construction site. He messes up, drops his wallet like a goon.
That's a great shot.
Oh, my goodness. That guy's got good eyes, though, to be standing up and to see all the way on the ground. He's got good vision. He's spotting nickels across the street. He's doing it all. So he knows the guy's name. So they're like, oh, you messed up. You messed up. They go back to the job site. They're going to throw him in the cement mixer. But of course, because the demon to kill is still inside the Punisher, even though he burned his fancy vest in an oil drum on the roof of his Fleabag motel, the Punisher isn't just a guy in a vest. It's a guy with a sledgehammer. And Todd, he beats the ever-loving snot out of these guys, and it's fantastic.
He does. The couple of things that you mentioned, nobody wants stepped-on sandwich, Joe.
No.
Two, those guys picking on the Punisher throughout the episode because they think he's stupid and blah, blah, blah. You're just like, oh, my God, you're all going to die horribly.
And the thing about it is these were, like, Central casting the least threatening tough guys exactly. in the history of the world. Like, they all look like they were made of dough and held together with, like, loosely tied twine. And it looked like the Punisher, just by looking at them, would have beaten them. But they were just like, huh? You don't talk, Beardo. So we're going to make fun of you, huh? You do your Beardo. Job really well, nerd. It's like, oh my god, these guys. Like, I wished, as much as I enjoyed seeing them be pummeled about the face, neck, chest, head, and leg area with a sledgehammer at the end of the first episode, I would have loved for it to be running through the entire season, and they're the last ones that the Punisher takes out. Like, he's still going out and doing Punisher stuff, like, he goes and gives himself the Punisher haircut and all that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. or maybe save the hair and fashions it together in a Legends of Tomorrow-style wig, and continues the job, and he's out at night killing, and they're like, oh, what's going on, Pete? You don't come in for your overtime anymore. Oh, what, do you got something better to do? And like, then he's having flashbacks of everyone being murdered. And then in the very last episode, the last scene is him just finally taking those guys out. But alas, it was just as enjoyable to see him do so at the end of this episode. And he throws them into the cement mixer with the new guy. He hangs up all the money and tells that guy to go leave town. And then the Punisher goes to that poker game that they went and tried to bust up. And he kills everyone there. And luckily, what's his face? Kenny Omega from the Bullet Club is watching it with his gate review technology and knows just by the way that he uses his walk, he's a walking man, no time to talk, and knows that it's the Punisher walking out of the thing. And that's the cliffhanger of the first episode. Some guy with a computer, probably gonna be Micro, knows that the Punisher is back.
Well, at the end of season two of Daredevil, he had a disc that said from Micro. Right. So they set that up, yes.
So I enjoyed this. I thought it was good. The B plot, you know, I'm sure it'll pay off at some point during the course of the series, but I just wanted to see John Barenthal, aka Pete, aka Frank Castle, aka the Punisher, kill some dudes, and he did, and it was awesome.
There you go. You're well on your way.
Hopefully, I will try to get a chance to watch more than one episode, in the coming weeks, so we can talk about it a little bit more, and hopefully I can wrap it up before all these shows come back. But I did have, wrestling this past weekend. I did have Super Secret Science job this weekend as well. And I also, went to go see on a Friday night, Todd.
Whoa.
Star Wars The Last Jedi. Directed and written by Rian Johnson, with a cast of dozens. Dozens, I say. So I don't need to explain to you, Todd, or the listeners of the show, what the premise of Star Wars and or The Last Jedi is. Did you like it? What are you going to talk about? What do you want to say? Anything you want to get off your chest? Now's the time.
I liked it, and I don't mean this in a bad way. That's about it. Like I said, there was great scenes at times, but I wasn't blown away by a lot of it. And then I rethought about it, and I was like, oh, okay, I think it's just because I'm older and I want a little more out of my plots, but they give you everything you should have as a Star Wars thing. But my biggest problem with the movie is Snoke's.
Right, Felicity's dad, sure.
Yes. is that there's not a lot of, like, he's never really truly explained, and this is spoilery, and then he's offed. And I hope there's more to it, because we live in a world where most of the Jedis were killed, except for the ones in hiding, and, you know, it's really just, it was Luke with Vader and the Emperor, and Luke, you know, Vader and the Emperor died, so it was Luke training people, but then I'm like, who is Snoke's? He's been the leader of the order for a while. It's just like, it's just very quick and very thrown away. And I'm not saying he had to be attached to anybody or he had to be any character that we know, but he's almost just irrelevant. Do you know what I mean? And I look at it as we got about as much, as I rethink about it, we got about as much information about Snoke's as we ever had about the Emperor before the prequels. if you know what I'm saying. Like, I'm complaining about stuff that I liked back in the day, but, you know, I was younger back in the day. So I don't know. That's kind of what I'm getting at. But otherwise, I enjoyed the movie. And I don't think they used too much porg. I think they used just the right amount of porg.
I like the way you say porg. Like, with a porg. Long, with a long, soft O.
I do love a long, soft O, Joe. Mm.
So, I liked the movie. But as I'm watching the movie, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
There was something that I felt, and it wasn't a disturbance of the force, but there was something in the movie I couldn't put my finger on.
Mm-hmm.
It felt weird. And I'm like, why am I not loving this movie? Mm-hmm. Why do I just like this movie? And I spent a lot of time thinking about the movie, more time than I've thought about a movie in a very long time.
Right.
And the reason I figured out, Todd, is Star Wars has changed. And when I say Star Wars has changed, a lot of the things that you and I have grown up on and loved as an entertainment or as a pop culture or a whatever it is have changed. And a lot of times I grow away from them. You know, at its core, professional wrestling has stayed the same, more or less, you know? It's a little less edgy, a lot less racist. women aren't beaten on a regular basis by men, but it's still a very enjoyable product. Comic books, for the most part, have not changed. You know, we talk all the time about how, like, Watchmen changed the way that stories are told, and The Dark Knight Returns changed the way that stories have told. And outside of a few different creators, you know, like the aforementioned Tom King, you know, your Jason Aarons, your Mark Wades, and people like that, comics really haven't changed all that much in the last 30 years. The way that comics or stories are told.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas something else like The Simpsons, as an example, The Simpsons have changed. Now, The Simpsons is still good from what I understand, but it's changed in a way that isn't for me anymore. And I'm not going to say that I've outgrown The Simpsons, but The Simpsons changed to cater to a different audience that isn't me. They know they need to change with the times to continue to bring more people in to watch the show if the show is going to continue as the perpetual motion machine that it is.
Can you say something about The Simpsons?
Yes.
Because it's a different animal where The Simpsons it makes fun of pop culture. And pop culture is constantly changing.
But The Simpsons didn't really start as a show that made fun of pop culture.
Right.
It became a show that relies heavily on the pop culture of the day.
Right.
But we could argue about that till I'm blue in the face.
Right.
Star Wars has changed.
How has it changed, Joe?
Okay. We don't talk about the prequels on this show. The prequels stink.
They stink on ice.
And again, I want to point this out, and I know there are sequel apologists out there, and I know there are sequel apologists that listen to this show, but I would be remiss not to mention this specific tweet that I saw over the weekend from someone that I am a big fan of their podcasting work. It's a gentleman by the name of Chris Anatista. He does a Simpsons podcast, ironically, amongst many other podcasts. And it's one of those things where it's like a conversation that he's tweeting. Me, the prequels suck. Someone else, you're wrong. Here's a link to a YouTube essay. Me, you're wrong. Here's a link to TNT, a TV channel airing the prequels in their entirety. Note that something cringeworthy, embarrassing, or contradictory to the story itself happens at least every 10 seconds. So, that pretty much sums up my opinion of the prequels. To each your own. You like the prequels, that's on you. I don't like the prequels, that's on me. I have to live with that secret shame. Force Awakens comes out, and Force Awakens really leans heavily on the previous three movies while introducing you to these new characters. A lot of people say that Force Awakens essentially is a soft reboot of what we now call Episode 4, A New Hope. I disagree, but I can definitely see why people say that.
See, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I don't think it's so much as a soft reboot as one of my friends put it eloquently, Scott, the Joe Kelly fan that you, the Summer You.
Oh, Summer Me.
Put out eloquently. He goes, he feels that it's a clean sweep to start anew. Not so much that it's, you know, doing anything different. It's like, all right, now we have our things, and it just feels like we're going to go someplace else from here on out.
And that's perfect. Someplace new. Mm-hmm. And that's what The Last Jedi was. Were there some familiar elements of people and places that we know or met from the previous three films? Yes. Or even from Force Awakens. Yes, obviously. That's where we were introduced to your Rays and your Finns and your Poe Damerons and so forth. Your BB-8s and so on. Outside of Yoda being in The Last Jedi, everyone else that's in... outside of Yoda, who was not in Force Awakens, everybody else in Last Jedi was in only Force Awakens.
Not true.
Okay, who else?
Outside of Yoda?
Yes.
Was only in Force Awakens?
Well, what I mean by that is, we were introduced to Luke, like, Luke was in Force Awakens. Luke is in this movie. Leia was in it. Leia's in this. Chewie's in this. The Porgs, okay. But what I'm saying is, there's not ton of stuff from the original, the only thing from the original trilogy that's in Last Jedi that wasn't in Force Awakens is Yoda.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I need to restate my thought.
Right. I think you said something wrong, or I took it wrong, but Now I got where you're going.
Okay. Because Force Awakens is the beginning of the new way we are going to tell Star Wars stories.
Mm-hmm.
I like Return of the Jedi. I don't think Return of the Jedi is as bad as a movie as it is, but because that is a movie that I watched dozens of times, maybe even close to 100 times, from the time that I was 6 to the time that I am now currently a 40-year-old man. If you go back and you think about Return of the Jedi, Return of the Jedi is really stupid. And I don't mean Ewoks, and I don't mean any of the other things that you could point at. The best part of that movie, with all the stuff that happens on Tatooine, with Jabba the Hutt and all of that stuff, Luke's plan is terrible, convoluted, and makes not a single lick of sense.
Right.
But it ends up working. You know why? Because it has to. Because the script Force says it has to.
The Force, Joe.
The Force.
The Force.
In The Last Jedi, who are Rey's parents? Are they Luke? Are they Leia? Are they Hans? Whose parents are they?
Ben Kenobi's family?
Ben Kenobi's family? No one's.
I like that, though.
Okay. I did too.
I like that a lot because I feel that it because if you had tied anything, that's all you would have cared about, and it would have overshadowed Rey's character,
mm-hmm.
where she's anybody now. She's everybody. She's you. She's me. She's a young girl. I don't care. Like, just it's just cool because you're hanging on that so hard that it to be nobody. Now, granted, that could be all a swerve.
Could be.
Like, because the only proof we have is Kylo Ren says it, but then he says, like, you kind of know it. And she's kind of like, yeah. So I would actually hate if they turned that around and made them somebody that would be important, unless they're brand new characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, brand new. Then I'd be fine with it.
So who is Snoke? Is Snoke someone that we've seen in the previous movies? Did Mace Windu survive and he's like a scarred up, messed up version? No, he's just a creep who has very strong force powers. We've never seen him before. Maybe we'll get his origin story of him as one of the even year movies or something. Like Snoke's origin or something. He's no one we've seen before, and it doesn't matter because he gets killed in this anyway. Whoops, anyway. So, hey, we're on the run from the Empire, or whatever they call themselves now, but it's always the Empire. And they have a tracker on us. Okay, here's the plan that Poe Dameron comes up with.
Oh,
Finn, you and Rose are going to go find this guy at this casino, right? He's going to be wearing this lapel pin. He's a fantastic code cracker. You're going to bring him back here, and he's going to crack the code. And it was a very convoluted plan. And if that happened in Return of the Jedi, Todd, it would have worked. But you know what, Todd? It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It was a terrible plan and it didn't work. Okay, hey, I'm Poe Dameron, I'm left in the ship, I'm gonna, stage a hostile mutiny, and everyone's gonna be with me, and, we're gonna turn this ship around, and nope, Princess Leia's gonna shoot me and stun me with her gun from the first movie, cause this is a terrible plan. These are characters who are making decisions and plans that don't work out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
They're adding flaws, and they're adding third dimensions to these characters in mm-hmm. these new movies. Han right. Solo was a smuggler with a heart of gold. Luke Skywalker was a farm boy with visions of, you know, becoming something bigger. All these characters from the original Star Wars movies, we love them because we grew up with them, but at their core are very one-dimensional characters.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker, in this movie, The Last Jedi, finally gets an end to his arc. He actually sees personal and, you know, personal and emotional growth at the end of the movie. And his story ends the same way that it began. Alone, staring out at the sun, thinking about what he wants to do with himself.
That is a great scene.
A fantastic scene.
It is. I really, like, because as soon as I saw him watch the sunset, I was like, That is really good. And even if you hate the prequels, like, some of that is in there, like that scene of the sunset, I really do like that. I really do like that. Do you think Luke is gone from the franchise, or are we going to get Force Ghost Luke?
I'm sure Force Ghost Luke will show up at least once.
Right. Now, as you're talking about this, the end of this and the beginning of that and the new and the old, the thing that I couldn't help but think about is how... And it's tragic, the loss of Carrie Fisher. How her character, you know, Luke got the end of his. Han got the end of his. Chewbacca's going to be around forever because they talked about how he's, you know, his people can live for hundreds and hundreds of years, and you can have people change actors, and it doesn't matter. But I really think we were robbed, and Leia's character and Carrie Fisher was robbed of the ending that I know we would have got in the third movie.
That, unfortunately, is out of the control of anyone, of course.
I'm totally saying that, but yes. I feel like, and in the end, in a selfish way, we were robbed. I wanted to see how that story would have ended.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it is, it's the circumstances, and it is what it is, but I'm not going to say it didn't go through my head. And I think a character is... great as Leia, and I'm not even going to get into the whole, like, women in sci-fi or action movies. Like, that was 1977. You know what I mean? Like, her, you know, shooting the thing and jumping down the garbage disposal flyboy. Like, it began some of that with her and Sigourney Weaver and all that. And just to see, like, and I wonder what they're going to do, whether they're going to CGI her, or they're going to how they're going to write her out. I'm just... Just a part of me is sad that as we saw the end of Han, we saw the end of Luke, we'll get the end of Leia's story. And that's kind of, you know, my thing.
So. But to close with this is I say, kind of in jest and kind of serious, I like the things that I like and I don't like change.
Mm-hmm.
The real quote is, I like the things that I like and I don't like change for the worse.
Right.
The Star Wars movies are no longer Star Wars movies. In that, they're good movies. And by that I mean, there was a time when comic book movies were comic book movies. And we looked at them, and everyone looked at them, even comic book fans, looked at them in kind of a thumbing your nose sort of way.
Right.
I'm going to maybe heap a little bit loftier praise, but it's a similar analogy, right? When Blade came out, Blade was good. It's like, oh, we can have an R-rated comic book movie now, and this is a thing. When the first X-Men movie came out, we're like, okay, now this is a thing. And the second X-Men movie came out, and they're like, oh, this is actually a good movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's not comic book people or not. And then more and more of these movies start coming out, and then you start getting movies like The Dark Knight or Winter Soldier or things like that that are good movies at their core, that just happen to have comic book characters in them.
Right.
Last Jedi was a good movie. A good, almost great movie that just happened to have Star Wars characters in it. If this was a sci-fi movie by any other name, people would say this was a landmark sci-fi film, and the characters were so nuanced, and the this and the that, but because everyone has such a preconceived notion of what a Star Wars movie is supposed to be in their head, that's why I think so many people still like the prequels, because it was the first Star Wars movies that we've had in almost 20 years. So we may never get these again, so we really better like them and really get around them and really prop them up, no matter how good or bad they might be.
Mm-hmm.
Force Awakens was a good movie, Rogue One was a good movie, and this is a good movie.
So I'm just going to say, so as we move further away, it's harder to tug at your heartstrings with nostalgia?
That's okay. I don't want you to tug at my heartstrings with nostalgia now. Mm-hmm. If you take a step back and start doing it, I'm going to question your belief in the properties.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make these properties bigger than what they are. They even say that in the movie. There's the scene with Yoda and Luke that essentially is what these movies are.
Right.
Where Yoda tells Luke that the texts mean nothing, the Jedi past means nothing, the Jedi, whatever the Jedi is going to be, needs to move forward.
It needs to grow,
and it needs to become something different.
Did you notice the books in the drawer in the Millennium Falcon?
Yes, I did.
So is it going to move past that? And you know what I have to say? I have to say, and as you say it, nuanced and three-dimensional. Kylo Ren as a character?
Yes.
Is fantastic now.
I thought he was great in Force Awakens. He's even better now.
He was, but he was meant to be pathetic. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, again, we were supposed to feel a little bit bad for him.
So in
Force Awakens, so that when they tease the babyface turn in this movie, and him and Rey, the side-by-side, back-to-back lightsaber battle, we're like, he's on the side of the goodies.
Right. See, I even kind of disagree with it. I kind of look at it as he is an emotional teenager. I'm just using, I don't know how old he is. Just, I want to be bad like my grandfather. I want to be him. And you have one of the greatest villains in the history of whatever. And he's trying to be, and he's pathetic at it. And even Snoke looks at him, and everybody's just like, this is what you want to be, but they're just going to manipulate you. And you kind of look at him and you go, oh man, he's such a jerk and just a whiny little, emo Jedi. And then he does what he does to his father. He kills Han, and you're like, okay, that makes him a little better. But in this, he just loses it, and he's like, I'm gonna kill Snoke's, and he takes over, and he becomes his own thing, and I love that. And like you said, he's layered. He had a moment, cause he thinks, he doesn't turn to the good as so much as he thinks, we can do this, me and Rey can be it, we can take over. And she's like, no, and he's like, screw it, I'm on this then, you know what I mean? And he ends up lying to that Second Order, and he just starts abusing that Second Order guy who's going to be the second coming of Starscream. Always trying to figure out how to screw Kylo Ren. I'm like, some of my favorite parts of this. But then other parts, like that whole B plot with Finn going to that casino. I'm like, you could have really cut a lot of that out.
Right, and that my only complaint about the movie is it was a little long at 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly could have tightened some of that stuff up, absolutely. But I still really like the movie for its faults, and everybody needs to have their screen time and everything else like that. But just to kind of go back to Kylo Ren a little bit, is Kylo Ren is closer to Luke in the original trilogy than he is to Darth Vader.
But he's getting further away as we go.
Right, he's the dark side of Luke, which is why that scene where Luke was going to strike him down as a small child is so much more heavy when you realize, Kylo Ren saw it one way and then what the truth of it actually was, or at least what Luke thought was the truth.
Are you saying that scene could be taken different ways from a certain point of view, Joe?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Yep.
Which is one of the things I hated the most in Star Wars.
Okay.
Is when Obi-Wan lays that line on Luke, and that's a BS line, where you could have just laid, you weren't ready for it, Luke. You were not. But to say, you killed my father, but from a certain point of view, no. No, 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 no. That is a straight up lie, Mr. Jedi.
Right.
So, but anyway.
Anyway, we talked for a long time about The Last Jedi, but not as long as Podvocacy did, so I call that a win. I want to say, ignore negative critiques about it, and it's very easy to do. It's just as easy to avoid the negative critiques about it as it is the spoilers, even though we've already spoiled a bunch of stuff in here. So at this point, you're already listening to spoiled stuff, so I think that ship has sailed. But I really liked it. I liked it a lot. And as I was listening to Jason and David and Jeremy talk about it, like they've already seen it like 2 and 3 times. And I'm like, I want to see this again. And I haven't wanted to see a movie a second time in a long time.
Right. You know why?
Why?
Porgs.
Porgs. All right, Todd. Anything else that we need to discuss before we put a bow on this one?
Nope, we're good.
All right, so for Todd, this is Joe closing on episode 377 of Long Box Heroes, and we will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop! It's week 16, everybody. You know, I remembered I haven't been putting the music in here. Remember I used to put Cletus's music in here?
Yeah.
Do you remember how it goes?
No.
I was going to have you sing it. All right. We just got home from wrestling practice, and we got a busy night ahead of us, so I'm not going to keep the man too long. Who do you think is going to win, the Colts or the Ravens?
Ravens.
Like Raven from Teen Titans?
No.
Vikings or Packers?
Vikings.
Falcons or Saints? You gotta say it. Nobody can see what you're doing. Falcons or Saints?
I know. Saints.
Bills or Patriots?
Patriots.
That's a controversial pick. The Browns or the Bears?
The Browns.
They gotta win eventually. The Lions or the Bengals?
Lions
sauce. The Broncos or the Redskins?
Redskins.
The Rams or the Titans?
Titans.
The Dolphins or the Chiefs?
Chiefs.
The Chargers or the Jets?
Jets.
The Buccaneers or the Panthers?
Panthers.
The Jaguars or the 49ers?
49ers.
The Seahawks or the Cowboys?
Seahawks.
The Giants or the Cardinals?
The Cardinals.
The Steelers or the Texans?
Texans.
Wow. The Raiders or the Eagles?
Eagles.
All right. That is week 15 or week 16. We only have one more week to go. And then we're done. Probably forever. Do you have anything else to say to anybody?
No.
All right.
So long, suckers.
All right. People. Suckers, people. Bye.
That's why I got to add something else. Ooh, sorry. Sorry.
Come on.
What?